This is F1 Debrief. Stop asking me questions. Coming up this week, we discuss the exits from FOTA, trouble with gearboxes galore, and some season reviews. So hello and welcome to the last F1 Debrief ever.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for the United States Grand Prix, who were granted an extension by Bernie to try and save their race. It's not looking good for them, really, but we know that Bernie never sticks to a deadline if he can possibly help it.
It is but 7 days. What, can you find that much money in such a short period?
It's been a bad week for Force India because, according to the Williams Eyewitness, they went to collect their car from the valet service at the hotel in Brazil one morning and found it was covered in mud. It had not been covered in mud when they dropped it off the night before.
It's a new Brazilian service, Valet Rally. You heard about it here first, people.
It's been a good week for the Run That Track endeavour, which raised somewhere around $200,000 over the season for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Amazing effort by all runners and fabulous UBS for donating the money. Apparently, Barney Whitwam, who is from Virgin and also has the most fabulous name ever, he ran every track and raised almost $2,000 all by himself. Barney Whitwam. I love it. It's been a bad week for everyone except Sebastian Ogier, as the French driver took victory in the Race of Champions this weekend. Sebastian Vettel and Michael Schumacher dominated in the Nations Cup, but then Schumi knocked out Vettel in the individual racing and was eventually knocked out himself as well.
And where did Petrov?
Oh, I gave up watching Petrov. He did beat Schumacher in one round, but I think he lost everything else.
At least he got to race on Sunday. Timo could only manage one round on Saturday. That was his one showing. Pathetic.
News and views.
As soon as the season ended, we started getting drivers confirmed all over the place. Charles Pick was confirmed at Virgin or Marussia or whatever it is they're going to be called.
We do know what they're going to be called because the FIA put out an official entry list for next year, although immediately after releasing it, they had to recall it and put out a second one after causing all sorts of confusion amongst fans. Thankfully, though, we now know that the team will be called Marussia F1 Team in 2012.
The entry list does still have lots of spaces. HRT had no one confirmed.
Even though they confirmed Pedro.
Toro Rosso have no one confirmed. Force India have no one confirmed. Also, Williams don't, but they announced they were keeping hold of Pastor Maldonado.
And they've got one spare seat. And Bottas? Is that how you pronounce it? I'm going to get yelled at for that.
Valtteri.
He's not jumping up to a race seat.
He will retain reserve driver
duties for next year. So Williams have a spare seat. There's a lot of spare seats going around, and it's very late in the year to have them decided.
There's also one spare seat at Lotus Renault, who will just be Lotus next year, because the other seat for them is going to Kimi Raikkonen.
Woohoo!
What a stir that caused.
Yes, that is. There's been a lot of interest in Kimi since his departure from Formula One. It's a name who's been missed, and I think it's great news for Formula One that he's come back. We missed him. Kimi bowed out of F1 rather disappointingly. He fizzled out as opposed to going out with a bang. And he's the kind of driver you want to see go out with a bang. So hopefully he will come back. He will prove any doubters wrong. And he will be good for Formula One because we need fast guys. I'm concerned about his chances in your rankings next year. He's not going to score very well.
He's not on the Twitter.
No, he never will be on the Twitter. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm glad that he's coming back.
I like him, and it will definitely be very interesting to see what happens. I worry that there are so many drivers coming back all the time. And obviously there's a whole issue with not letting young people have the seats and no testing, and teams want more experience, and then the more experience they cling on to, the less likely they're going to have people to replace them in the future. These drivers can't go on and on forever.
Rubens also, can.
Well,
he's trying to.
He would like to. Also, I'm just a bit worried. I mean, he says he's motivated, I'm sure he is, and he says he has unfinished business in F1 and he likes to race like that, and he didn't get the same buzz of like wheel-to-wheel racing like he did in the rally. But he seemed so happy at rally, and instantly he's back in Formula One, and the pictures of him, he looks miserable, and I don't know. He also added in his interview that they did in the press release that there were things about F1 that he didn't like, and why does he think that's going to have changed?
It's not going to have changed. What has changed is the tyres have changed. Interestingly enough, he used Pirellis when he was rallying, so with any luck he will be at least attuned to the characteristics of those tyres. He's got a lot of catching up to do. Schumacher came back, he's failed to reach his own high standards he set before he left. I would be amazed if Kimi can do anything different, especially in a Lotus Renault. What are they called next year? Lotus.
Going through a transitionary period. They were so confused all year. Now they're Lotus Renault, just to distinguish them from the Lotus, and then they'll be Lotus.
Is it any wonder this is the last F1 debrief of? I don't even know whether they're called Lotus or Renault. Whatever they're called, I can't see that Kimi is going to be what they need to bring them to the front. We know that Kubica has said he's not able to come back to the start for the start of the year, so we shall have to wait and see who they decide to put alongside him. Yay for Kimi coming back, but don't expect too much. Certainly not at the beginning.
So there's talk of comebacks this week, but there's also been talk of exits, as both Red Bull and Ferrari have left FOTA.
They've fallen out.
Yeah.
They've had a big old disagreement and said, we simply can't get along anymore.
This was not at all predictable.
I didn't see it coming. No, not
never.
All year.
No. Nope.
Not since FOTA began. It's an unwise move if they want to have any long-term control over the sport. However, it's exactly what FOTA are born to do. They get together, they make all these predictions and proclamations.
They fight the good fight.
And then they split up because they can't get along for nothing.
I have never really been a fan of FOTA. They did what they had to do, and then they lied.
They didn't do anything.
They did that breakaway thing, I don't know, whatever, and then they lied to all the fans. And really, it seems as though they've spent all year arguing and not agreeing on anything. So I can't believe this hasn't happened sooner, and surely must mean the end of FOTA.
It could be a maneuver to bring the other teams in line, because the only odd thing about this decision is that two teams fell out. Normally, one team would disagree and say, "That stuff it, I'm taking my ball, I'm going home."
Usually Ferrari.
Normally, might be Ferrari, especially as they have more power than the rest of them. The fact that two teams have gone in two separate directions.
Two big teams.
You might suggest that perhaps there is that they're attempting to bring the remainder of the teams into line on one subject or another, and it seems likely that it's the resource restriction agreement that's the crux of it. So it could be that they actually agree on something and the rest of the teams don't. We don't know, because it's a closed arrangement, and we aren't privy to the meetings and the decisions that get made there, so we don't actually know what's going on. I'm only guessing. It just seems very odd that two teams both went, "Well, that's it then. You can go and I'm going." You know, well, why not just stick around and try and be more powerful without the other?
I also think that if that is the case, I think that Ferrari are leading the way, because was it Autosport had the news exclusively, and then Ferrari released a statement, and it was quite a long statement. They said they thought about it a lot, and you know, it was a big decision, because Luca di Montezemolo has been chairman of FOTA and everything. And then Red Bull followed up with we've also left. And that was their statement.
Yes, I don't understand the ins and outs of it. You're right, it's something that's been expected for a long time. Eventually they're going to fall out on something or other. In the end, what they're doing is they are admitting that they can't get along, and therefore they're never going to get to control the sport and to decide its future. Because they can't get along long enough to do that. What it does mean, though, is that Ferrari, if the breakup does happen and they do go their separate ways in February after this the deadline for leaving has elapsed, it does mean Ferrari can now spend their way to the front. And we know that they've been struggling to do that, and Red Bull seem to have found a loophole or two to allow them to spend whatever they like and pull them, you know, to drive their way to the front. And so Ferrari will be able to catch up, which is no doubt what's been vexing them up till now. It was the last qualifying of 2011, and I forgot to watch it. I was busy doing something else. I can't really discuss the matters that occurred.
I think at this point it doesn't really matter.
I guess Vettel got pole. I thought he would have beforehand, which is why I wasn't that bothered about missing it.
He very likely did 15 pole positions altogether, I think, in his very
fantastic
dominant
season. What an achievement.
At the start of the race, it wasn't Webber who had a terrible start, as per usual. It was Rubens Barrichello. He got,
as per usual,
bogged down.
As per usual.
Oh, yeah, that does happen.
Bit of a hill. You'd think that Rubens, of all people, would know that Interlagos, the main straight on Interlagos, is a bit on a hill. Now, I know he's, you know, in the past he started in a Ferrari at the front, and it's less of an incline, but he's from Brazil. This is his home track. He should know this better than anybody. The guy couldn't get the car started again, and he did qualify well, didn't he? He was up the order in qualifying, and it instantly was farther back.
Instantly ruined, especially as it was potentially his last race. He was talking about it and saying, if this is my last race, you know, I don't want to treat it like that, and the big swan song.
If Rubens Barrichello is still driving in 2012, there is something very wrong with the Formula One regulations. What? Probably the fact that there is no in-season testing means no young drivers can come in. But he shouldn't be driving at that age and having competed in that many Grand Prix. He just shouldn't. It's just not right.
I think we know there is something very wrong with the regulations, but that's a whole other can of worms to open. What this race was dominated by was reliability issues, particularly the gearboxes. They all seem to be falling apart all
over
the place. What
happened? They just cried, enough is enough. This season has been going on far too long. I'm packing it in.
Many, many drivers seem to have issues, but the most high-profile ones were Sebastian Vettel, who lost his lead because he had to short shift and do all that saving stuff.
Mm-hmm. He had to drive his way around a gearbox problem, which he did incredibly well. Because
he felt like Senna.
I don't know what he was referencing then. I'm sure it was a significant moment in F1 history that went right over my head. But the guy did well because he managed to save his gearbox and get the car to the end, unlike Lewis Hamilton, whose car fell to pieces on him and died.
Yeah.
How disappointing.
It was in the F1.com edit. It's really depressing because you just see his car slow down. He's all by himself on track. He just slows and pulls off the road all by himself.
It was depressing at the time because I was loving the fight between Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa. Two guys who have entertained us all season.
Entertaining is not the word I
would
use. I
was begging for yet more clashes. But no, Felipe Massa managed to keep his car ahead of Lewis Hamilton, and neither car collided.
They did, didn't they, pull Hamilton in early to the pits as well, after a few laps of chasing him.
In order to make the jump, and that didn't work because Massa responded and he came out in front of Lewis, and battle recommenced. However, it was short lived because Lewis's gearbox gave up before the drivers did, which was a shame because it was a highlight of the race until that point.
After the race as well, they all like hugged and kissed. All made up
they
now.
They hugged and kissed? Well, you don't want to start rumours like that.
Maybe not. But it's all made up between them now, apparently. Although I did like that Massa said, yeah, he came in and apologised and everything. I wasn't going to go to him because I've not done anything wrong all year. Like, they are friends again, but he just had to make that point one more time.
They are friends again until they meet on track next year.
Yeah.
Let's see how that pans out. Sebastian Vettel, there was controversy about Sebastian Vettel's gearbox because it did seem slightly suspicious that perhaps Red Bull were trying to contrive a race win for Mark Webber. Now, you're not buying it. I'm not buying it either.
I just think they've not done anything to help Webber for 2 years. Why would they bother? why would they?
That's
it doesn't
point.
Make any sense. It doesn't mean anything. Webber probably doesn't care at this point. He's beyond it. You know, Vettel is dominating him so much that one race win is not going to make all the difference. I can't think that they even had him in their thoughts.
In the last podcast, I accused Red Bull of lying through their teeth, and along with Pirelli, who were claiming that they had no idea what caused Sebastian Vettel's rear puncture. And I don't believe for one second that they don't know what that reason is. And I believe that because you could tell from what they were saying, didn't add up. The words coming out of their mouths didn't tally between the team and the tyre manufacturer. And their excuses were poor and, it was easy to see through their what they were saying, whereas in the case of Vettel's gearbox, actually what they were saying did add up and did make sense. And I think that Red Bull are such bad liars that you can easily see when they're telling porkies. And I think when it came down to the damaged tyre in Abu Dhabi, that was, you know, it was easy to see that they were trying to cover it up, and this time they weren't.
The guy is due some bad luck. I mean,
Vettel.
it's bad for us that his bad luck came when it didn't even matter and all the championships were not at stake.
And it is a long season and it's a lot for the gearboxes to do. It's amazing that it happened to Vettel. It's amazing that he lost first place. He came second to his teammate. And to that end, if you were just purely looking at the results, you could argue that perhaps there was, that was too fortuitous. But I think it's a hard thing to fake a broken gearbox because you can, you know, other teams will be able to hear it.
Bad luck also went Timo Glock's way because his wheel fell off after a pit stop.
He was angry.
He was really properly angry. He's called it a catastrophe on Twitter. He wouldn't talk to the media. He was in a proper strop.
He had a sulk. He wouldn't speak to the BBC in case he said something too awful about the team that he couldn't take back. To my mind, I suspect the guy might be angling for the second Renault seat. If he has any sense, he would, you know, he would do well to be Kimi Raikkonen's teammate next year. However, it's likely that Charles Pick is going to be his teammate, and he's going to be stuck at Virgin for one more year.
The race was sort of bookended by moves between Alonso and Button.
Mm. Yes, first move, Alonso on Button. Fantastic. Jensen, after the race, admitted that there was debris on the track and he was unsure how to pass it without picking up a punch or running over it. And therefore, Alonso seized the initiative and overtook at a place that isn't a traditional passing place on the circuit, aided potentially by DRS. The DRS kept the cars closer together into that section, but Alonso made a masterful move on Jensen, and it looked to seal that position for him until right at the end of the Grand Prix, when Alonso couldn't make his tyres work, and Jensen did, and Jensen managed to repay the favour.
They managed two overtaking moves during the race and didn't touch at all, whereas Bruno Senna and Michael Schumacher only managed one overtaking move, and they touched twice.
That was fun. I don't know if I agree with the stewarding decision on
when
that one.
When do you ever?
Well, sometimes, most of the time this season, except in the latter half when I think they've made all the wrong decisions. They should ask me before making a decision,
well,
and
obviously.
Then I will agree with everything they say.
But then if everyone's going to say that, and if they have to ask every fan, that's going to take a while.
They could tweet it, and they could get a consensus.
They could put a poll up.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would solve a lot of controversies. One team I do have to mention is Sauber. The only competition worth keeping an eye on in the final races was where was Sauber going to end up and who was going to beat them in the final closing stages of this season. At the very beginning of the year, they lost a huge points haul when their rear wing was declared illegal and they were thrown out of the results of the first race, and that's hurt them. It's hurt them as other teams became stronger throughout the year. And Sauber couldn't keep up with that development, and it was very close. They came very close to losing out to Toro Rosso in the final race of the year, but thankfully, Kamui Kobayashi, he brought the car home.
But he was told on the radio, do not break the car. Are you listening to me?
It's very, very important. And Perez had a late spin, which must have put their hearts in their mouths.
They told the wrong driver, clearly.
Yes, but he recovered from that spin, and thankfully... Sauber got the points they richly deserved. They beat Toro Rosso. It wasn't a disaster of a season for them, which it might have been if they lost it the last. You know, they lost that position at the last race of the year.
Yeah, the other team that were very, very anxious towards the end of the race was Lotus.
Mm.
I think we've mentioned it before.
Yes, we have. That's Team Lotus.
Desperately.
Next year, Team Caterham.
Yes, Lotus, Caterham, Lotus. They desperately wanted to keep their 10th. place, and I've always said I don't see who's going to take it from them, and they managed to keep it, and everyone was very, very happy about it, so that's good.
That's a cool $40 million.
So they say.
Yes, well, no, they don't. They say 30. I think Tony mentioned previously the team would be lined for $30 million, but the fantastic Ted confirmed on the BBC that it would in fact be $40 million.
Okay,
that's quite a bundle of cash.
Any advance on 40? You had 30, he's saying 40. Any advance on that?
I'll go 50. No, I don't know. I really have no idea, but it's a
Ted
worthwhile
knows his stuff.
It brings the team up into another tier of payments. So that means presumably as long as the results keep coming, the payments will keep coming year after year.
Well, Mike and Tony keep saying they're going to be in the other column.
Yes, they
whatever
are.
Whatever that means.
They're whatever, a second, third column tier team, I don't know. This is the kind of thing that I don't understand, but we go to Joe Sayward to answer those questions, and he's explained it to us four times, and it still goes over my head. Anyway, the important thing is they've got $40 million. That's going to help them. They're going to be a team to watch next year. I thought Team Lotus would be the team to watch this year, but they weren't really. But next year, they're definitely going to be the team to watch. That's my tip.
Okay. And this time next year, we'll be saying the same thing.
This time next year, I'm saying nothing.
But the team not to watch seems to be HRT, because well, this race Liuzzi retired with alternator failure,
which right at the end
is exactly the same as what happened to Daniel Ricciardo in Abu Dhabi. So they had the exact same problem. Clearly they didn't even try to fix it. They knew it could be a problem. We'll just send them out, see what happens.
Yes, and it's such a silly little problem. It's awful. I mean, I don't remember prior to the HRT, I don't remember the last car to fail because of an alternator issue. It's the kind of thing that used to happen in the 80s, and they've managed it twice in two races now. HRT, what a disaster. They've announced Pedro for next year, but they haven't announced a teammate. Presumably his teammate will be whoever can pay them the most amount of money. They're trying to make a Spanish national team, which is why Pedro has been
brought
back in. It could be, would you wish that on Jaime?
No.
What a waste of time. Can they just go away? What are they bringing to Formula One now? Have they brought anything to Formula One this year? They're just movable roadblocks when they don't have alternator failures. It's a disaster. Go away.
Do you think the same of Marussia and Virgin?
Yeah,
because HRT outqualified them this race. They've done that a few times.
That's true. I mean, what did Virgin bring to Formula One? They brought in Lucas Degrassi. They dropped him after a year. They brought in Jerome D'Ambrosio, who did a great job this year. They've dropped him again. They brought in Charles Pick, whose credentials don't speak any better than the two previous drivers. What's the point of them?
The only two things I have left to mention, which actually on my show notes here, two entertaining bits, I suppose. Massa did some donuts at the end of the race.
He did.
He's not allowed to.
Oh, stuff it. It's the end of the year. It's his home race and they loved him for it. And I liked it.
Except he almost lost it.
Did he? Didn't he need to crash into the wall?
He narrowly avoided the wall.
Oh, that would have been class. What a great way to end the season. That would have been brilliant. I mean, I did notice that he nearly couldn't get back in the pit lane because he nearly overshot it.
Yeah.
He could have nearly had to do one more lap. That would have been good too. More donuts, please. More celebrations. Love them.
And the F1 Rocks thing, they had Jessie J.
A pop star I have heard of.
And Macy Gray.
Another pop star I have of old. I vaguely remember. She's still going.
I didn't know.
No.
I saw footage of it and she sang I Try. So if she is still going, she has no new songs.
Not that we've heard of. I love F1 Rocks. I love that these bands and these artists are turning
up in
the paddock.
You just like it now because they're ones you've heard of.
No, I just like the intersection of music and sport and it's a good way to bring fans to both. You know, you can enjoy Formula One, you can enjoy racing cars and you can enjoy music. And I'm very, very jealous of all the journalists and all the people who go to the races and now get to hang out with all these cool pop stars and see these live acts that in the past they'd go home to an empty hotel room in their own company.
We've had a couple of messages summing up the race from Rolando. He says two words, boring race. Two more words, predictable season. Three words, glad it's over.
Oh.
That's quite a harsh summary.
I know how he feels, though. I felt the same way last year.
George mentions the Vettel conspiracy. He says, hi there, just a quick comment on the F1 last weekend in Brazil. So we heard from Vettel's engineer that his gearbox was breaking, but that he does the fastest lap of the race. Was this just a decoy to send Webber through and stop Alonso from getting third place? After all, there was only one point in it.
He did.
I can't think they care about anyone else in the championship, do they?
I didn't know he set the fastest lap. That is slightly unfortunate. He set the fastest lap of the race with a broken gearbox? I can see why people think it's a conspiracy. They kind of create their own problems, don't they? They can't even, well, okay, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think they're that good at lying. Maybe they learned to lie in the last 2 weeks.
Now it's time for our fabulous race admin, which I have never got around to making a jingle for because it's quite a boring name. First up, we have our rookie performance reports. And the first one is for Daniel Ricciardo. This is from Davin. He sent me an email. He's sick this week, so he didn't record it. But the word is participatory. Now, if that
he
means
up.
That he participated in it, then yes, that is true. He didn't give me any other information, so I assume that's what he means.
Well, Liuzzi had the measure of Ricciardo until his alternator failed. He wasn't going very well. I don't know what Red Bull sees in the guy. I know HRT isn't a great place to judge the drivers, but he hasn't consistently got the better of his teammates this year. I think Yamamoto even got the better of him at one point. He's not done enough. I don't think he's done
very
well.
But he's very smiley.
Right. Yes. He would make a great...
That would be my performance report every week, by the way, if I was doing it. So smiley.
He's like Karun. Ricciardo would make a great pundit.
And now we can hear from Stephen.
It seems today in Formula One that what we say isn't much obeyed. But Stephen Roy definitely knows a thing about a young boy from West Lothian. Paul de Rester is a rookie, so should we lay a fiver with the bookie? Tell us, Stephen, nice and quick. No need for a song or for a dance. Was it a cross or was it a tick?
Satisfying.
And Stephen does actually elaborate on his one word.
I was amazed to discover that he completed more laps than anyone else this season. I don't think I've ever heard of a rookie doing that. It's fair to say the season was a success because he obviously showed a lot of speed, and to claim the record, he brought the car home in almost every race. It'd be interesting to see what his second season is like now that he's got nothing sort of new to learn and he's got experience of all the tracks. I think you'll find Hülkenberg a tougher proposition than Sutil. So, nice little piece of intelligent driving from Sutil that didn't get a lot of comments in Brazil. We saw Schumacher pass Bruno Senna on the outside of turn one, then turn in and there was a collision between them. A bit later in the race, Sutil made exactly the same move in Nico Rosberg. But rather than sort of cut in when he saw Rosberg was still there, he held the wide line. threw him through the corner, and then the next time round, Sutil made the pass. You don't really expect Sutil to do something a bit more intelligent than Schumacher, but it happened.
Sutil picked a fine time to put in a good run. I hadn't really given it much thought, but that was a good drive from Sutil.
I think Sutil's done pretty well all year, but it's difficult because he has been quite overshadowed by Paul de Resta, because everyone's amazed that Paul de Resta is so secure and confident for a rookie.
Mm.
And then you think Sutil should be washing him away, but he's done pretty well.
Where do you think, do we see Sutil ending up at Williams? Is that his destination now? It's a difficult, sorry to put you on the spot. I don't know. I can see that you're looking at me completely blankly. It's a silly question to ask you. I don't have a clue either. I can see
Sutil
him
and Raikkonen.
Well.
No.
I can't see that working too well.
No, that doesn't work. Sutil and Pastor Maldonado.
Mm. Hmm. Yes, so long as you've got a lot of spare parts.
I was also really impressed with Button's pass on Alonso from a really clever piece of position of his car 3 or 4 corners before that. It's interesting when you look at the season, though. Alonso's been involved in all the great overtakes this season. There was 2 by Hamilton, 1 offline when it was soaking wet at Copse at Silverstone. Then Lewis went round the outside of him at the Nürburgring. Then there was the Weber pass at the entry to Eau Rouge. It's one of the best, bravest moves I've ever seen. Every time I see it still, I think I'm going to crash. Aside from those, there were a few where Alonso made the pass rather than was being passed. He always seemed to be in the thick of the action, even though his car wasn't up to it. Maybe even consider him as driver of the season.
I hadn't thought about driver of the season. That's a really interesting idea.
You're going to need some time to think about that.
Well, yeah. We've got to do our driver of the day now, but perhaps I could do a quick post on the site for driver of the season.
I'll give it some thought while you do that. I'm going to go for, though, driver of the day. Now that it's come to my mind, I'm thinking Sutil might be driver of the day. I can't think that there were that many other candidates. Vettel drove well with a broken gearbox. Brackets, if you believe that to be the case. Webber inherited a win and looked like he'd inherited a win at the end of it. Button made up for his earlier, can you call it a mistake? His earlier, whatever you call it, his lack of aggression earlier in the race that led Alonso by. Alonso did a fantastic job in a car that shouldn't have been where it was. I think Massa might well be my driver of the day. He didn't do very well, but what he... here's the thing. Felipe Massa has been smashing into Lewis Hamilton repeatedly throughout the season. And finally, I think he outpsyched Lewis Hamilton and prevented Lewis from having a go at overtaking Massa purely by his previous actions earlier in the year. So even though he crashed into him loads of times and he cut him up and he got penalties and all the things we've been through, the fact that he'd done all that, when push came to shove, Lewis backed out of it. And in the past, I think it's a manoeuvre Lewis would have gone for. You know, he would have tried, he would have pushed, he'd have been ducking left and right, and he'd have tried to go on the inside, tried to go on the outside or whatever. In this instance, in Brazil, he hung back. And he didn't attempt to, you know, he didn't push Massa, and Massa didn't crash, and he did okay. I mean, you know, his teammate beat him or whatever, but I think he did all right. It seems, it's a hard sell. I'm not selling it at all well, so I'm going to go with Sutil.
Right. I was just going to say that on the F1.com race edit, and I'm not going to go on about it all the time, except that we do watch it to refresh our memories. So basically, that's all I know about the race. Rob was nodding this time, and we've talked before about how he has seemed absolutely miserable in the edits because Massa has had quite a dire season and a lot of crashes. But in this particular one, he was seen nodding happily. So that must be Massa improved a little bit.
Okay. So
but
who
are you
going to go for?
Nobody
stands out. I'm just looking through the results. I didn't actually realise Perez didn't get a point in the end. You know, we talked earlier about him spinning. He didn't actually get the point. It was Kamui who got that point. He came ninth and he got the points that saved Sauber's day. So maybe Kamui Kobayashi for not having a terrible race.
Okay. Any more?
Who else took part? Who else took part? Heikki Kovalainen.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
Because I like him. I don't know. There's nobody stood out. I haven't really got a driver of the day.
I was going to go for Webber, but you've just told me that he inherited
his race. Oh, really?
What
did he do?
So, fine. I'm not going to do that now. And actually, I don't know, like you say, there isn't anyone particularly deserving. So I'm going to give it to Petrov because I love him and I'm worried he's not going to have a seat next year and this might be my last chance.
Do you know what? I haven't even got a more sensible argument I can't even criticize you for that. I'm going, my driver of the day is Felipe Massa for not crashing into Lewis Hamilton, and your driver of the day is Vitaly Petrov because it might be the last chance you get to award it.
Sold.
Who listens to this?
We've had a couple of season reviews via voicemail, which I'd like to play a little bit of now. They're quite long, so what I'm going to do is play sort of edited highlights and then put the full voicemail on the show notes, which will be on sidepodcast.com, so you can listen to the whole thing there. First up,
And make sure you do listen. Don't just go, yeah, I'll go and listen to that later. But no, go to sidepodcast. After this show finishes, go to sidepodcast, find those voicemails in the show notes. They'll be somewhere near the bottom of the post. Find them out, play them, and listen to everything everyone has to say, and tell us whether you agree or disagree with these season reviews.
Sometimes there are outtakes there as well, so it's always worth having a look. But first up is from Alex Andronov, otherwise known as Giggles.
Hi, Side Podcast. This is Alex of Giggles fame here with a brief thought about the 2011 season. It's an incredible season. It's been 2011 burst onto the scene with DRS and Pirelli tyres, and it was hard to tell what was going on. There was so much overtaking. It was unbelievable. It's hard to remember now because it's been such an incredibly long season. But at the beginning of the season, there were so many overtakes, there was so much happening. It was the most phenomenal beginning to the season I remember for many years. Unfortunately, one team ran away with it, and what we can only hope is that the closeness, the ability to keep these teams together in the running is something that will continue to 2012, when hopefully McLaren and Ferrari will get their act together. Maybe Mercedes, maybe another team will get their act together and rival Red Bull. You never know. But 2011, the interesting thing is to whether it was the tyres or whether it was DRS. DRS, when it's not worked, has really hampered the ability to overtake. But that's only really been seen towards the end of the season. Is it that they've been less good at getting the DRS zones right, or is it that the teams have become more attuned to the Pirelli tyres? I do worry that next year we're going to see a real the negation of everything because the teams are going to be used to the Pirelli tyres. I hope that Pirelli make big changes for next year and keep all of the teams on their toes as much as they did this year.
Hello, Side Podcast. This is Dap with my 2011 season review. While I'm too young to remember McLaren's years of dominance in any meaningful way, even as a boy of five back in 1988 when Senna won his first championship, I realized there was something magical about the man and the car. A similar season for Mansell at Williams in 92 had me in awe of both driver and machine. Looking back at that time and our collective nostalgia for it, makes it hard for me to think of how readily we disparage a record-setting season like the one we've just seen. I've been dismissive of Red Bull in the past, quick to cite inconsistency and frequent retirements, quick to point out Vettel's supposed inability to overtake, quick to snipe at the questionable utterances of Dr. Marco. Having the titles wrapped up so early in the season just compounded my sense of Red Bull fatigue. But the wonderful thing about a season wrap-up is that it's our first chance to look back rather than around. And looking back, I can't help but wonder if a lot of 5- and 6-year-old children will look to these days as something similar and formative in their imaginations, and if that new Blue Nui missile will have a similar impact. Certainly more impact than DRS.
Thanks to Giggles and that second voicemail from Dap. DRS really has tailed off towards the end of the year. I don't know if it's because they've just messed up the places, they haven't learned anything, or the teams are getting better and actually it's showing up how DRS wasn't that useful in the first place and it's all been about the tyres.
I would not have minded it if the FIA declared during one of the final races of the year, maybe, say, India or somewhere, one of the last 4 or 5 races, and said, you know what, we're not going to have DRS in this race.
Because
I think what would have happened, I'm second guessing it, but I think we would have had an even duller race. Despite DRS not bringing much to the party in the final races, it still brought something. And without it, we would be back to 2010. And 2010 was blinking awful. And I don't want to go back to 2010, even though we have these new Pirelli tyres that you know, they're more biodegradable or whatever. I think the TRS, it's become more subtle, which is what people were crying out for at the beginning of the season. It doesn't define the race, but it adds something. It brings something to the party. And I'm sincerely hopeful that it continues next year and they continue experimenting and pushing it and trying out new things.
I guess the thing is with the tyres, they made a big difference at the beginning of the season, but they're always going to reduce in impact because teams are going to learn.
Yes.
Whereas something like DRS, whatever impact it has, should be the same. Although obviously the FIA have been tweaking it this year.
They have. A Kurs also doesn't get the credit it deserves, but then it doesn't have the profile that it should have because of the way the rules are set out and the fact that fans can't see when Kurs is being used unless it happens to be on screen at the time. But McLaren were only, you know, Jenson Button got his wins and Lewis Hamilton got his wins largely because their Kurs system is one of the best on the grid. And Mercedes pulled ahead of the midfield pack almost entirely because of how good their Kurs was.
Yeah, I think it was this race went with Button's big overtake at the end. And they were saying that he set that up from the beginning of the lap because he saved his Kurs for the moment when he needed it for the overtake.
Yes, he gave it an awful lot of thought.
So the commentators specifically picked up on that. But if they don't mention it, we never really notice it.
It's invisible unless the camera and the director is focused on a particular driver or pair of drivers and they've got that information on screen. And that's the only time you see it. It never gets relayed to something like live timing or fans via the F1 timing app. It doesn't have that information. So we're in the dark about it, but certainly in McLaren's case, they ended strongly. They ended the year strongly, largely because their Kurs was better than Ferrari's.
Now to some other bits of feedback. This is from Matthew, who says, I was just watching some of the BBC's F1 classics and I realised that we need refuelling back. In Malaysia, In Malaysia 2003, Alonso pitted early for fuel, which put him out of sync with everyone else. We just don't have that anymore.
Nope.
And people said that the old shaped cars were difficult to overtake, but there was for sure enough to make an entertaining race. It's an age-old argument.
I love Matthew for bringing this up right now because it's just what we need is more irate people complaining that we want to bring refueling back and nobody else does. I very much miss it. DRS is a poor substitute, but it'll do. The thing you lose without refueling is the unknowns and the uncertainty of whether a driver is slow or just out of position or just out of sync. So, you know, the guy may be somewhere in the midfield but on a completely different strategy to the guy who's out front and then will come back. And tyres and DRS just don't do that.
Oh, I hate tyres.
Tyres, yeah, well, we don't have as much interest in Pirelli as, say, Pirelli does, but, you know, I can see why refueling has gone. I know why it's gone. It's gone because it's not cool to be seen refueling Formula One cars with petrol when, you know, petrol prices are going up and it's not ecologically friendly. And that's why it's gone, and it sadly isn't coming back.
And there's the whole danger thing as well.
That wasn't the reason. It was all about money and it was all about appearances. But it's a shame that it's gone and nothing is going to replace it, sadly. But I'm with Matthew.
Next up from Mark, who says, DSI Podcast, I only have one question. What was the best race of the year? I would have to say it was the Canadian GP without a doubt. Also, a massive thank you for the top quality podcast that I've listened to throughout the year. It's enhanced my enjoyment of F1, no matter how late the podcast is. Don't tell me he's wrong. He's being nice.
Wrong.
I wish all at SI Podcast an early happy Christmas and look forward to listening to SI Podcast next year by Mark from Ireland. Now,
cheers, Mark. You're wrong. That's wrong, Mark from Ireland.
That will probably also be covered in this post I'm going to do about driver of the season, and I might update the rate the race post.
So race of the season.
I do a little graph, don't I, and everything. So.
Not Canada because the red flag was diabolical. I think it made Formula One look stupid having a 2-hour delay at primetime TV viewing in the UK.
Let's not go over that
so
again.
So that is why Mark is wrong, and definitely, I mean, it was a great race when it got going, but Formula One and the rain don't mix, and it comes out looking... Yeah, I didn't start it. Mark started it. So what was the best race of the year? I'm going to say Silverstone because Murray Walker commentated on it, but if you discount that because you couldn't hear his commentary or you weren't in the UK or whatever, you weren't listening to it, I think Hungary actually was a high point, especially because you don't normally associate great racing in Hungary. That's
true enough.
They don't normally go side by side, but I enjoyed that one. Turkey also, a terrible race for spectators. Very, very, very poor attendance. And not a great atmosphere at Turkey, but the race there.
I was going to say, I have the only possible way I could answer this question is to look at the race rate the race results.
Because you can't remember.
As if.
You don't remember what you did yesterday.
I just said I had to watch F1.com to remember Brazil, so this is ridiculous.
I know.
Turkey, I gave a 10, and that's the only race I gave a 10, so it must be that one.
I know. I think you're wrong. I know what race you liked the best this season.
Really?
I happen to have inside information inside your brain that you don't have.
Okay.
The first race of the season, Vitaly Petrov got third. He got a podium.
Yeah, International Day of Petrov.
Exactly. And therefore, that must be, but surely, your favourite race of the year, the first race of the season.
That is true.
Can I also add Korea to the list, because Jeremy and Amy went there and they brought the vibe of Korea back to us. And
it was
a terrible race, though. Sadly, it was, yes. But what was the question? Was it my favourite race or the favourite? I suppose, yeah.
What was the best race of
Yeah,
this?
Fine.
Well, I think we'll continue this debate.
I like Silverstone. Silverstone had a lot going for it. It was Fernando's only win. That was good. I like that. The weather was changeable. That was good. Vettel failed to overtake, given the opportunity. That was key to the season. I'm going to go with Silverstone or Hungary or Turkey.
Well, I wouldn't want to pin you
down. I'm in an indecisive mood today. What can I say? Stop asking me questions.
This next from Pete, who says, hello, Christine and Mr. C, of course. I just wanted to echo the sentiments of James from Australia, whose email you read on the last podcast. He spoke up for those of us that lurk in the background of the side podcast world. We may make our presence known only rarely, but we're out there and we love what you do. It makes my head spin to think of how much time, money and effort you must put into the production and maintenance of all the various aspects of side podcasts.
Don't think about it.
Forums, wikis,
just
tweets,
don't think about it.
Podcasts, blogs, staying on top of the news, making contacts around the world, keeping up with other racing series. Good Lord, do you ever sleep? It's all I can do to simply keep up with F1 and listen to your various podcasts. Anyway, thank you, and I'm looking forward to the 2012 season already. I'll be making a bit of a donation after writing this in the name of helping quality grassroots programming.
Aww.
A note on 2013 in New Jersey. I want people to start thinking about an NYC GP side podcast meetup. I, for one, will most certainly be there, considering I live only an hour away. We could organise a pub crawl for each night in the hopes of running into some drivers.
I'm there.
Kimmy's bound to get his Finlandia on at least once, and perhaps even Joe Saywood would come along. Cheers, guys. Pete.
Yes, you're a star. Thank you for donating. Much appreciated. I don't think we're going to get to the NYC race, if only because I don't have an awful lot of faith in Formula One's ability to crack America.
It's
falling over itself to fail.
But I hope it works.
I do hope it. I mean, I hope both races work out. I hope Austin, even if Austin can't go ahead next year, then we get two American Grand Prix in 2013. Please tell me that this time next year we're not sitting here bemoaning the loss of both.
Pete did add a PS. He said, did I hear Christine let Mr. C's first name slip on the last podcast? Does it start with D and end in Avid? Now, I don't remember addressing you as David. I can't think that that is something I would do because I actually know you as Mr. C.
Do you know what my real name is?
Most of my family call you Mr. C as well.
They do.
So, you know, I'm not sure you've even got a name. And now this comes from another Pete, who says, dear Christine and Mr. C, just a quick note to say thank you for all the hard work you've put in this year. I started listening to the podcast 18 months ago and have been hooked ever since. I even de-lurked on the comments for the last few races. My only regret is that I didn't do this earlier. Anyway, as side podcast has become such an enjoyable part in my F1 fanatic experience, I would hate for the switch to Sky to be the reason for some of the awesome work you do to be cut back. I have therefore donated a month's Sky subscription, and I hope that this will act as an encouragement to others to do similar. It only takes 8 more people to do the same and the season is paid for. I think the contribution the two of you make to all the listeners, commenters and readers out in the world of F1 is more than worth it. Enjoy December off. You have definitely earned it. Much love, Pete Higgins. PS, is there a contact form on the website? I looked all over, but I couldn't find a contact section anywhere.
I almost. Well, is that a different Pete?
That's a different Pete, yes.
Thank you, Pete. Love you. Much appreciate.
Sidepodcast.com/about.
Shut it. I've moved on from that. Appreciate the donation, but...
Yeah.
It's not about having... the money for Sky. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast so much, but certainly on Sky Podcast in the comments we have discussed that next year we are not planning to get Sky. Right now at this point we're not planning to make the purchase to get the dish to see every single race
we considered
live
it,
next
definitely.
Year. We looked at all the options extensively. But it's not solely about not having enough money. It's that the money Sky would cost we feel could be better spent on other things. So if you donate to Side Podcast, we will certainly put that money to good use, but watching every race live doesn't feel essential to us next year.
It sounds crazy as well. Like, we could run a Cyberpodcast website without seeing every race. Well, I actually think you described it really well. We were having a conversation between us out loud, actually talking to each other.
Offline?
It's bizarre.
We should have recorded it.
I know. But you actually explained it quite well in that I like to write and do fun things like that, you know, and look at Twitter and collate tweets and all that fun stuff. And you like to code websites and make geeky things and apps and all amazing stuff like that. And then F1 is just the sort of thing all our creative stuff hangs on.
Mm. It could be anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be Formula One. It's fair to say we are not Formula One fanatics. We're not racing fanatics. We're not motorsport fanatics.
We like it.
We like it. But that's a big step away from making sure you watch every single event as it happens, etc. One thing I think when we downshifted last year, I was quite scared by the number of people who were outraged at our statement that we were a bit bored of Formula One last year because we weren't enjoying it that much, and people couldn't comprehend in their head, you know, they just couldn't get their head around the fact that we weren't going to watch every single race. And last year, I wouldn't say Cypodcast suffered that much for the fact, I mean, you missed 5 or 6 races and I missed 3 or 4 last year. And next year, we're going to miss 10 races live, but we'll probably catch up with them after the fact. So we're not going to miss out that much, and we're going to save ourselves an awful lot of money. Now, you're welcome to donate to Cypodcast. We don't discourage donations at all.
Absolutely.
But please don't donate in the assumption that it's solely about the money. It's not purely, we need £300 to do this, or whatever, it might be £600. It's a crazy amount of money. It's,
yeah.
If we had that money, we can do better things with it than give it to Rupert Murdoch in order to watch Formula One live.
Is it worth it for the couple of hours it would take to then watch it on the BBC later?
Exactly. It's not like we can't watch it later. We just have to avoid the news for a bit. And the repercussions of that are that it affects, some things will be affected on Cypodcast, like the way live comments work and all that. We're still working that out in our heads, what stays, what goes, what we do next year.
We're having a lot of those out loud conversations.
Mm, absolutely, together.
Yeah.
Which is weird, especially for people who are listening at home and don't get to hear them.
No.
But they do get to hear this one, and we are still working through what Cypodcast will look like in 2012.
But we do have plans and exciting
lots of plans,
ideas.
But one of those plans is not to do F1 debrief anymore. And this is the show that started Cypodcast,
yep,
albeit under a different name. But
actually,
it feels
under
like
the
it's
name
run its course.
Cypodcast.
Yes. It does feel like the concept has run its course. And after every race, to debrief a Formula One race and discuss it and to bounce ideas around, to choose your driver of the day and things like that, we've now done that for 5 years. And probably it's time to do something else. And so that's what we're going to do next year. There will be more podcasts. This isn't the last Cypodcast.
It's the last ever F1 debrief. It's not the last ever show from Cypodcast.
No. Rather, possibly an overdramatic introduction.
Well, you know, I like to make an entrance.
You like to scare people.
But yeah, what we would like to do is to concentrate on making better quality and more interesting things rather than just peddling each week, trying to keep up with the
We did
the
a lot of peddling this year.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Here's the thing. If you pay us loads of money, if you donate loads of money and we buy Sky, we don't have the energy and the stamina to make it through another season like this year. I cannot do another season with 19 races or 20 races or however many Bernie decrees we have to do next year. Not paying for Sky, we only have to follow 10 races, and therefore we should be less tired and we should have more energy for doing all sorts of other interesting things. Hope that makes sense. There's bound to be questions yeah, in the comments.
I think really things are changing. Things are not going to be the same. We're not sure what we're going to watch and how we're going to work it out, but we're not giving up. We do have lots of plans. We're actually really excited about
Hugely excited things
that are coming up. And so although it is changing, we hope that it's changing for the better, and we hope you'll come along for the ride. But we do understand that it's a scary thing to embrace the change.
Housekeeping.
As Pete mentioned in that last message, we are actually taking December off as well.
It's December now.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that this show has to be released, I've already written a couple of posts in December, and I've got that Rate the Season race
you've just made up
coming up soon as well. Apart from that, we're taking December off.
I love holidays.
Really, the plan is just not to do very much. It's not about not doing anything and shutting off completely. I mean, we followed Race for Champions this weekend, and that was brilliant. But it's, yeah, about not really... Nobody should expect anything in December.
It's definitely about lowering expectations.
We need a bit of a rest, but we'll be back in January. So everyone should head back to sidepodcast.com to see what we've come up with.
Keep an eye. It's all changing. Exciting things to look out for on the website too.
Now, to finish off, was it the last podcast where we had a song and we asked for more songs? And we got two songs this week.
We didn't.
We did.
People responded.
Yeah. We've got a song from the aforementioned Giggles.
He spoke earlier.
Yep. And we have a song from Layla.
Layla? A song from Layla? You got me on my knees, Layla.
No, different Layla.
Can we hear that first?
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Side Podcast. On the show this week, the fans say well done to Christine and Mr. C for creating superb podcasts this year. We also thank Joe, the Daily Writers, and all the fantastic commenters. And most of all, well done everybody for surviving this mammoth season.
That was brief.
Yeah, it's like a thank you awards ceremony.
Oh, we haven't thanked anybody.
Well, thanks to everyone.
Thanks to everybody. That's your thank you speech?
Well, I find that if you thank everyone, then you've thanked everyone and no one has missed out.
So just to cover all.
Yeah, it's thanks not, to everyone. Everyone is brilliant.
Missing some emotion there. Can I thank Stephen and Davin for their rookie reports?
Because
Stephen contributed, I think he phoned to every single show this year for every single race. Davin's contributed to every single one since Ricciardo started racing. Obviously, he didn't race the whole season.
Even when he was sick, he still sent them
indeed.
In.
And also, thank you to Giggles, who made the jingle you heard earlier, right at the start of the season. So, though, you know, we love contributions. We love creative people. And thank you for the songs.
Thanks to everyone who sent in feedback and everyone who could be bothered to find the contact form.
Thank you to everybody who didn't give me grief about not being able to find the contact form. Thank you to all the comments. Thank you to all the voicemails. Thank you to everybody who has contributed to this show. Thank you to Joe for his An Aside With Joe podcast. And much appreciate him giving us his time. There are so many people to thank. You are right. You know, I think you're onto something with thanking everybody. So thank you to everybody.
I said that. So I think that is us done. We've done our thank yous. We've talked about the race. God, that feels like a long time ago. We've had loads of feedback. Yeah, I think we're done.
170 shows in the can. Thank you, Christine. We have Giggles to play us out. Goodbye, everybody.
It's the end of the season. It's time to retire. We'll try to keep warm at home by the fire. Unless you are listening from south of that line, when summer is coming and you will be fine. Side podcast leaving us now. We'll try to be okay, we'll make it somehow. It's time for a rest, it is time for a sleep. See you in a month, not in a week.
We have a glorious sunny day here in the studio. We've seen some action today as well. Jessica Rennis, good night.